Here's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Copycat league, Pierre. What do you think the other GMs in the league are going to take from this Florida run and maybe try to apply to their own team moving forward?
Oh, boy. First of all, I got to get the tragically hip out of my mind. I was just going on a hip, 10 songs in a row in the car here. I'm in the parking lot. One of my daughters on the ice, and I just put the hip on.
All right.
When I get in a hip mode, man, I just get all... I want to be at the lake, and I just, oh, man, I'm so fired up right now.
Yep, it's hypnotic. It's hypnotic.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got to be careful to label Florida, the number 8 seeds, and there's no question they got in by a hair. We all know the story, Pittsburgh helping them in the final week, losing at home to Chicago, but... It's also a team that won the President's Trophy the year before. And I remember thinking during the year when the Panthers were struggling and I was doing other hits and people were asking about them, you know, I never thought they were as good as the first team in the league last year. They had a lot of shootout wins and overtime wins, and it kind of masked, you know, it kind of inflated their point total last year. But at the same time, I never thought they were the team that was struggling this year. Somewhere in the middle of first in the league and a number 8 seed lied, I thought, a decent team when they were healthy and everything was going. Add to that the fact, and I've talked to Paul Maurice about this during the playoff run, the metamorphosis of this team, which was a real struggle. He had to convince a bunch of players early on this year to completely change their ways. And, you know, Sasha Barkov, the captain, was telling me a couple of weeks ago while they were playing the Leafs, he said, you know, we went from an offense-only team to a team that plays a style that has more repeatable success. I mean, that's what the captain of the team said. And it was not easy. Like, there were guys that struggled to get on board here with what Paul Maurice was selling in the first couple months, and it didn't look good. But needless to say, they got it together just in time.
How do the people that are, you know, you talk about being a copycat league, Pierre, and people stop me and they say, I want a guy like Sam Bennett over a guy like William Nylander. But how do you kind of find a balance with that? Because if you have a bunch of Sam Bennetts that score 17 to 22 goals, maybe you struggle to get into the playoffs.
Right.
So how do you look at players and personnel and say, that's nice, but you got to have a mix of it?
Oh, dog, that is a great question. I just like to point that out. I think I've mentioned this before, but one of my favorite quotes ever was from Brian McClellan a year after the Capitals won the Cup, you know, and they finally got, they unburdened themselves by finally breaking through, right, and so on and so on. And one of the things he said to me once was, one of the things that he realized after winning the Cup is that you need to try and juggle your roster so that you have a team for the regular season, which is not nothing, by the way. Hard to make the playoffs, and it's important to have success in the regular season.
Yeah.
But you also need a team for the playoffs. And there are certain players that are for the playoffs in your roster, and there are certain players that are for the regular season on your roster, and some overlap. And that always stuck with me, because I know exactly what he's saying. And by the way, I think we know who his playoff guys are.
Let me interrupt you for a second. How many years in a row do you need to see players not play well in the playoffs to deem them playoff players or not playoff players?
Right, right. Well, I was going to answer your original question by saying I'd like to have Sam Bennett and William Nylander on the Leafs.
You know what? The both of them on the same line would be a great line.
Yeah, I mean, Nylander played his guts out, I thought. It's just that he's so inconsistent. And he's like, but when he's going, like, especially on elimination night, I thought he was Toronto's best player. But yes, you need some Sam Bennetts. You need the guy that the other fan base hates. The reason they hate him. I mean, there's a level of greasiness to all four teams that reached the conference finals. You can point out the guys. I mean, one is suspended right now for Dallas. I'll just say it. Jamie Benn's one of my favorite players in the league. He made a dumb decision at a terrible time, but I'll have him on my team any day, Jamie Benn. You need those guys, but, you know, the trick for the Leafs here, and whether it's Brad Treliving or someone else that comes in as GM, is to be careful how much you change, because this is a team that gets 100 points a year, and that's not nothing. And I've got to tell you, I've asked this question to a lot of different front office people around the league over the last couple of weeks, just out of curiosity to get their answer. And I've not had a uniform answer when I asked them what they would do if they were running the Leafs. There's a lot of different answers coming in. Hmm. And I think that tells you it's not an easy situation to be in right now in Toronto Maple Leafs.
Tell us some.
Well, for starters, and I had this conversation with one executive today, you know, and I think you said this week, O-Dog. I don't know where Brian and Noodles are on this, but the first thing this guy said to me is, you can't go past July 1st with Austin Matthews still being unsigned. The idea that you still have a whole year to figure it out and there's goodwill and, you know, the whole point is to sign him. You don't want to trade him. Of course, that's the whole point is to sign him. But once July 1st comes and goes, if he's not signed, you've lost all your leverage. Now, at the end of the day, signing him is the only option. I haven't heard a single person from another organization when I asked them about the Leafs say, what do you do there? Everyone wants him signed if they're the Leafs. No one said trade Austin Matthews. So, but there's some urgency to it. There, you know, there's 5 weeks to go. The guy that I found a real mixed response on is Mitch Marner. There's no question that every single person I talk to believes he's an almost impossible player to replace, but he's also the guy that nets you the most. And if there's any way to bring back a number one defenseman in a trade for Mitch Marner, that's the trade that you look at. That's what I've heard from some people. But I've also heard people say, don't even go there. Don't even go there. Can't win without Mitch Marner. Again, just to show you that a lot of smart hockey people look at this completely differently right now when it comes to what the Leafs need.
Well, and that is what makes it very complex and very difficult to get a read on is, you know, as they continue to interview prospective GMs, all of them are going to step in with a different viewpoint. And then on top of it, Shanahan's got his viewpoint. And, you know, who knows what he really believes or what he wants to believe and what he's the view he's taking. Is he taking a Stanley Cup or bust view, or is he taking a business blueprint view, right?
Right.
Or he's the president, which means he's beholden to owners, and this is a business. This isn't fun. They're here to make money. And obviously, they'd make the most money if they won a cup, right? If you win a Stanley Cup, they'd make a fortune, an absolute fortune. But miss the playoffs, that loses a lot of revenue, right? Like that.
Right.
So it's compelling having those home dates. How many did they have? They had, what, six home playoff games? That's a lot of money. That's
well,
a lot of money they just made.
And again, being a good regular season team, I know people scoff because we've all grown up with the Stanley Cup being the only thing that matters to us as fans, as media. But being a team that routinely just is able to drop 100 points in the bank before the puck even drops in October is not nothing.
Right.
Like let's look at the Leafs decades of the last 6 years. This is as good as the Leafs team as they've ever had. They've just not been able to translate it. But to your point about business, they're good business for 8 months of the year.
Yeah, they are.
So that is not nothing. But again, you're trying to get greedy and figure out both To answer your question, it's not easy. I mean, one thing that I would do if I was Brendan Shanahan, and we know that he met with Brad Treliving this week, is that this could be an educational process for Shanahan, depending on how many people he meets with or talks to over Zoom, to kind of selfishly get their raw perspective of his team. It may be that some of these guys that he's pretty sure going into it, I don't think that guy's going to be my GM, but I sure respect his opinion. And it might be that Brendan Shanahan gets more out of this process than anyone else, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And you hear about that a lot of executives that go through a GM search or a coaching search and then turn the tables around in some of these interviews and say, tell me about my team. What would you do? And I've heard of people that have used that and actually put that into action, even though that person who shared that information doesn't even end up working with them. So this is a fascinating time now for Brendan Shanahan, although it's certainly also full of risk, after firing Kyle Dubas.
Pierre, if the consensus is that Matthews' contract would be after hiring a general manager, would be task number one. What is task number two? You know, like it seems like that's a, you know, that's a huge, large looming thing, but there's still work to be done underneath that. So is it kind
tons.
Of a, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so it just, you know, what is, if it's get a GM in place, see where Austin Matthews camp is, and then the work starts. Like, what, you know, what is there? There's task 2 to 20, really, that there's some work there, is it not?
Yeah, for sure, Noodles. And listen, they got 10 UFAs, but
right.
Ironing out the Matthews extension has such an impact on what other players you may be able to get or to stick around, has a huge influence. Let's not kid ourselves. That's why it's so important. Number two for me would be deciding whether Sheldon Keefe comes back to coach another year or whether you're making a coaching change, because that's another big, you know, that's a big staple in who you are as a team moving forward. And again, you know, a key for the Leafs, once again, this summer, we'll be trying to attract some players, perhaps, to take a bit less to fill out the bottom end of the roster. And part of that is, here we are again. We're going to contend. Austin's back, and here's our coach. And it could be Sheldon Keefe, who, by all accounts, you know, players in Toronto enjoy playing for him. Or it could be Coach X. And either way, you got to make that decision really quickly, I think, to fill out where this is headed. And I suspect that's exactly the order it's going to go in. Figure out Pierre. Matthews and then the coach, or pretty close, one or the other.
Pierre, you talk about, like, taking money and getting guys to come for less. Like, Nylander's another interesting case where he did show some spirit and he showed some fight and he tried, which I guess we're going to reward people for these days. I guess that's what we're going to do. But if he's going to be commanding $10 million himself, that just doesn't work. Like, you just can't pay another guy double digits and expect to have any kind of balance in your roster. It'd be insane. Insane.
Yeah, and the only thing that could benefit the Leafs in all this, with Nylander and Matthews being 1 year away, is that the cap finally jumps in 12 months. So when those extensions actually come into effect, the cap will go up. Although,
Pierre, you know, I don't care if the cap, unless the cap's going up $60 million, I don't care. Unless it's going up $60 million, I do not care.
I just don't think there's any, like, there's no way he's getting $10 million a year. He scored.
He's a 40 goal scorer,
and Alex DeBrincat scored it twice in a row. He's not a $10 million player. I'm sorry.
What do you think he's going to ask for, Jamie?
And Matthew Tkachuk's up for the heart. Matthew Tkachuk got 9.5. And Tkachuk's a better player than Nylander. I'm sorry. I know that there's some people
obviously
around here that would be hurt by me saying that.
No,
but he's
no
not a $10 million player.
Of course not. But guess what? Mitch Marner's not a $10.9 million player, but he got it. I mean, that's what's at the center of all this, is they screwed it up so badly 5-6 years ago, so horribly awful the way they handled it all, that they've jammed themselves up. Because you can't look at Tkachuk's contract because it's irrelevant. You know, like, Matthews starts at 11-6 and moves up. Like, he's not going backwards because Tkachuk's got signed for 9-5. Like, that's not going to happen.
And the other tough part is Matthew Tkachuk's contract in South Florida has a different AAV than had he stayed in Calgary and signed long term. You're getting a bit of a Florida benefit there too. I'm just saying. I mean,
sure,
that's the reality. That's the reality for some of the deals that end up getting signed in Tampa, Florida, Dallas, Vegas.
Yeah, the tax situation.
That's just reality.
Yeah. Here's what bothers me about that though, is the players don't have to accept that. They don't want to. Like, that's just conceded. Tkachuk could have said, no, I'll take 11. And Florida would say, fine, 11. Like, if he's like, if you want me, because Carolina wants me, other teams want me, Calgary wants me, he chose to accept 9.5. And yet up here in Canada, it's like, well, you can't do that. I mean, how dare you ask the player to be treated the same way he would in a market where there's five people in the
ring. And actually, I would say if there's such a thing as a classy way to force a trade, that's what he did last summer, him and his agent Craig Oster, because they could have been really tough on Calgary and said, you know what, we'll just play out the next year and then we're off just like Johnny Gaudreau for nothing. They gave them such a heads up,
sure,
that at least Brad Treliving was able to get Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar for him. But
well, there's an example there, Pierre. Like, they paid Huberdeau more than Tkachuk got.
Right. And again, that's the,
like, think about that.
But, I mean, the market is part of it, is what I'm saying. The market's part of it.
And he had them over the fire.
And keep in mind, Alberta is, it's a tax, it's same tax situation as Florida. It's 39%. Like, it's different. Like, Alberta tax is way different than Ontario and Quebec tax. Like, it's, you know, that situation is actually advantageous for Huberdeau.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I call that minus 30 in February tax. That's what I call that.
That is fair.
That's fair.
Going back to Nylander, this is why the timing of all these things kind of stinks for Toronto, is that I agree. Like, listen, first of all, the same applies to Austin Matthews, even though you have no choice but to sign him, because you're no longer a contender if Austin Matthews doesn't sign. But, and I think, Brian, you said this week, and I wholeheartedly agree. I understand that everyone agrees they have to sign Austin Matthews. I understand that everyone has loved everything he's done as a Leaf, because they should. He's arguably the greatest player ever in franchise history already. But it would be nice if the number came in. Listen, he's going to get paid huge, but there's still a difference at the end of the day between a million or two a year.
Yes.
As far as filling out the rest of the roster. And that part of the negotiation will speak volumes too, I think. So, I don't think they get off the hook from that either. But again, then it travels down to Nylander, to O'Dog's point. I wouldn't pay him $10 million either. Even I'm sure his side could argue that the number is justified based on other contracts signed around the league. But again, it's filling out the rest of the roster. Really good player. When he's on, he's electrifying. But I think you got to make that fit. And the reality is, he's has an agent who's been very good at these negotiations. Lewis Gross, we saw last time, but he has other clients that, you know, there could be some hardball. And here's the thing. If it goes sideways, your leverage in terms of trading him is not that great, because he's got a year left on his deal. And as a guy from another team said to me today, here we go again. Now you got to bring in the agent and have the agent part of a trade, because you'd rather trade him as a signed player so you get more in return.
Right.
Pierre, but that's a complicated process.
Yep.
It is, and I've never heard that from anybody. And not everyone has to come out with the Nate MacKinnon comment saying, I'll take that just to be a contender. But there hasn't even been anything mentioned in the same family of language, if you know what
right.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, none of the players. None of them.
Well,
and, you know, MacKinnon signed after he'd won a cup.
Yeah.
And not to, you know, twist the knife, but the loss, you know, the separation with Kyle Dubas is not nothing when it comes to this thing. I mean, again, you could argue that Kyle Dubas, with less experience, you know, didn't negotiate, you know, the best possible deals for those guys a few years ago, but now you wonder how it would have worked out. My point is, he had pretty close relationship with some of these players. The players, you could tell on exit day, the comments they made about him, you know, have a relationship with him, trust him. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't trust a new guy either, so I don't want to oversell it.
I was just going to say, Pierre, this isn't kindergarten. Yeah. Sometimes you got to go to senior kindergarten. Like, give me a break.
Well, I just mean in terms of the trust in that kind of negotiation in real time is all. I think
Matthew's agent just walks down the hall and it's all good.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I was wondering.
Both got the same agent.
What a jerk thing to say.
It was on a platter for me.
Ask me the question.
What's up with this Dubas story? Kyle's got an agent that's, you know, is in the Wasserman Group, which happens to be the Matthews agency, among other players, right. And the PA and some other agents around the league, it sounds, aren't so keen about that, or what's up with this story?
Well, that's exactly it. Is the original griping definitely comes from rival agents who rightfully point out that the rules are pretty strict about not having anyone in your agency represent anyone on the front office or coaching side. It's actually why, you know, NHL coaches whose salaries have really risen in the last 10 years, as you guys know, there's only four or five coaches agents in the world. It's a very niche. Sort of, you know, it's Gil Scott, Neil Glassberg, Francois Giguere, Steve Mountain. That's about it, because they can't represent players. They can only represent coaches. And they can represent front office. So there's a church and state divide between the people that can negotiate for players and between the people that can negotiate for coaches and front office. Now, and a lot of this is a bit inside baseball, I think, for a lot of fans, but the person that was negotiating with Shanahan on behalf of Dubas, a guy named Chris Armstrong, is a golf agent for Wasserman. He also, my understanding is, went to school with, and he's been a family friend of the Dubas family for 15-plus years. Like, they've been buddies. And my sense of it is he's not actually Kyle Dubas' agent, but kind of stepped in and said, let me help you out. Having said that, it caught the attention of a lot of rival agents because, of course, he's a golf agent at Wasserman, which also has certified hockey agents. So the NHLPA is looking into the matter, which doesn't mean anything to Kyle Dubas, of course, but what it might mean is, I don't know what it means to, you know, to the people at Wasserman, I guess.
All right. Well, and for the Leafs, it's not their issue anymore, right?
Right.
It has nothing to do with what's going on with them,
right,
and where it's going to go. So we'll see, Pierre. It's going to be an active month and a half, buddy. And we'll let you get back to the hip.
I'm going to go back to the hip. I might stay with the rest of Overdrive, though.
Okay. So
Kings and pretty things.
There you go, Pierre.
I'm not staying with Overdrive.
Yeah, that's basically Gord Downie, what you just heard there. Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you,
Pierre LeBrunner, TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, the Hip do have that vibe. They are a summer band. They're a great band at any point. But they kind of synonymous with lakes and cottages, being up
north.
Dude,
as soon as I get off the 400 and I'm on the country roads on the way to Collingwood, it's Hip, it's loud, and it's gorgeous.
Yep, it's outstanding. Outstanding.